Welcome to Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us for our podcast as well as for our broadcast on 89.3 KPCC over the KPCC app or streaming at kpcc.org. With all these ways to listen, there's simply no excuse to miss a week of Film Week. I'm so pleased to be joined by critics Leah Lowenstein and Wade Major. We begin with the Australian set drama Penguin Bloom. It's based on the book Penguin the Magpie, The Odd Little Bird Who Saved a Family by Bradley Trevor Grieve and Cameron Bloom. The adaptation is by Harry Cripps and Sean Grant. Glendon Ivan is the director of the film, which stars Naomi Watts, Andrew Lincoln, and Jackie Weaver. Wade, what'd you think of Penguin Bloom?
Despite the fact that it is somewhat predictable and somewhat formulaic, I really loved it. And I loved it because it's one of those movies that doesn't mind that it's telling you an easily calculated story because the performances are so great. And it's a true story. Cameron Bloom wrote the book with Trevor Grieve, obviously, based on his experience with his wife who was injured and became a paraplegic, and how the family had to struggle to accommodate all of the emotional baggage that came with that, and how, you know, they had to learn to become a family again. And you kind of know where this movie's going to go, but it's an amazing part for Naomi Watts. She is just superb. And Andrew Lincoln, who has forever kind of lived in the shadows as the guy with the signs in Love Actually, he really gets to chew it up here. He has just never been better. I really love this movie.
Penguin Bloom, Lael.
Yes, pretty much right there with Wade. It is a heartfelt and inspiring story that, for the most part, avoids sentimentality where it could have gone really super mawkish. It is predictable, and that's because it's a story of a woman with a broken back bonding with a broken bird who's fallen far from a nest. And, you know, so all of those notes are kind of a little too on the nose, perhaps, but it's got a tremendous performance by Naomi Watts. As Wade said, she's never been kind of more nakedly vulnerable and more just raw. And it's, you know, I felt that as much as I, even though I knew where it was going, I didn't mind that it took me on that journey. And the problems with the film being predictable, I felt in the end, are not really the film's problems, but more our problems collectively, that we've seen too many of these kinds of films to make them feel utterly original. But it is a true story and a moving one. So, yes, would recommend.
Penguin Bloom, the Australian set film starring Naomi Watts, Andrew Lincoln, and Jackie Weaver. It's unrated, and it starts streaming on Netflix Tuesday of next week. The drama Our Friend stars Jason Segel, Dakota Johnson, and Casey Affleck. Gabriella Copperthwaite is the director. Brad Inglesby wrote the screenplay. Lael.
So this is a really similar film in certain ways to Penguin Bloom, in that it also deals with a family experiencing a health crisis and the ways in which that crisis sort of frays at the edges of that family, and then eventually they emerge through it. In this case, Dakota Fanning is a mother who is dying of cancer, and Casey Affleck, her husband, Jason Segel, their best friend who comes in and cares for them. It is also a true story, and it was based on, Matthew Teague, who was a war correspondent and wrote the account of his wife's terminal cancer for Esquire. It has been made into a film that's kind of hard to classify. It's in some ways sentimental, where you wish it was more factual. In some ways, I wish, as someone who's been through dealing with the loss of a person from cancer and terminal illness, I wish it had sort of allowed us to see more of the process of hospice. There's a wonderful turn by Cherry Jones as a hospice worker, very, very small part, but she shines. But in the end, for me, this was really about Jason Segel, who brings just great light and great humor and levity to the part of Dane, the best friend. And he is always the most winning element of this film, I thought.
I just want to clarify, it's Dakota Johnson who's the co-star. That's the Dakota in this film. Wade, what'd you think of Our Friend?
It is very, very similar in many respects to Penguin Bloom, and I responded to it emotionally in much the same way. I think possibly even stronger. It pushes some different buttons. It's a slightly different family, and it's a little darker in certain respects. The things that the family has to go through. Obviously, this is not paralysis. This is death, and it elevates things. And there are darker edges to what the family has had to go through over time, and what Matthew Teague had to do in his career. So it needs more levity to kind of pull you out of those dark corners, and that is what Jason Segel does. It's extraordinary. The line that he walks, the razor's edge he walks, because he's a comic actor primarily. That's what we know him as. And here he really brings levity when it's needed, but he also brings severity when it's needed. And what's so beautiful about this is that it is about this guy that everyone thinks is a loser. But you know what? He has the one characteristic that makes him a winner, and that is loyalty. And that's what saves this family, is that he is so loyal to them. And it makes you sort of reevaluate how we judge people and why we judge people. And we think, you know, everyone will ridicule someone for characteristics that we may think are relevant everywhere else in society, except for the ones that are really meaningful when it counts. And loyalty counts.
Our friend, the drama starring Jason Segel, Dakota Johnson, and Casey Affleck, Gabriella Cowperthwaite is the director, and Brad Inglesby wrote it. It's rated R. You can see it at the Vineland Drive-In in the City of Industry, and it's available to watch at home on the on-demand platforms Apple TV, Google Play, and Amazon Prime Video. The Human Factor, a documentary directed by Dror Morey. Wade?
This is a really kind of an interesting and frustrating documentary at the same time. They went and roped in everyone over the last three decades who's been a part of the Middle East peace process, negotiators and administration officials from the Bush administration, the Clinton administration, from the Obama administration, from the Trump administration, all of them to sort of talk about the ups and downs of trying to find peace between Israel and Palestine. And what emerges from this is it's a mess, and there's probably no solution, and all of them have really been sort of hoping for harboring aspirations far, far beyond what reality can accommodate, and it sort of leaves you hanging. It's a bit of a depressing ending. It doesn't necessarily take us to the present moment where we've had a number of Middle Eastern countries who have recognized Israel and made peace with Israel, so we don't really know where that leads. But the broad scope of this over the course of 30 years is one of futility and misdirection. And I don't know that makes it a successful documentary, but it certainly is interesting.
The Human Factor, documentary from director Dror Morey. It's rated PG-13, and it's being screened in limited release. Coming Clean, a documentary about opioid addiction. Andy Timoner is the director of the documentary. Lael?
Yes, and Andy Timoner has the sort of unique distinction of having won the Grand Jury Prize at Sundance for documentary directing a couple of times for films. And so she takes a really unusual look at the opioid crisis in America. This film uses all kinds of elements that you wouldn't necessarily expect to find, and puts together a kind of fascinating composite portrait of a country in crisis dealing with an epidemic, and an even more pressing one now that opioid use has apparently skyrocketed even more in the last year since COVID. What she does is she compiles interviews from people who are suffering from opioid addiction, all the way through authors and experts, all the way through prosecutors and legislators. And what she doesn't say right away, but what becomes clear throughout the course of the film, is that these people are actually much more connected than we would think. For example, you meet a prosecutor who's going after people with opioid issues and going after the system. And it turns out that he has a relative very close to him who had an opioid addiction. And you see people that are in the process of trying to turn their lives around. And what it does is, rather than pandering to them, rather than patronizing them, rather than whitewashing them, it allows a very kind of human portrait of this addiction to emerge. And it's very effectively assembled using animation, using a sort of pulsing soundtrack, And what I learned through this is the process of restorative justice, or what they call therapeutic justice in this film, is potentially, you know, much more viable and much more promising than traditional avenues of punishment or dealing with the opioid problem. And it's really quite an eye-opening film, from recovering addicts to those still kind of in the throes of the addiction. It taught me so much more than I was aware of, and really strongly recommend it.
Coming Clean is the documentary from director Andy Timoner. The film is unrated, and you can watch it at home via Lemley's Virtual Cinema, Coming Clean. The crime drama The White Tiger is written and directed by Ramin Bahrani. It's based on the book The White Tiger. Wade, what did you think?
Boy, this is going to kind of be an interesting test on Netflix to see how this plays. I think it's a very good film. I think it's a fascinating film, but it really lays bare all of the contradictions of modern India in a way that is very, very non-glamorous. It is brutal and it is cruel, and it's not even like Slumdog Millionaire, which is a wonderful movie that has these incredibly dark edges, but also these wonderful explosions of light. This one, right in the middle, the narrator tells you, now my story takes a very dark turn, and it goes very dark. And it'll be interesting to see if people kind of stick around for the ride. Bahrani, of course, is an incredibly talented director. He's been around for a long time. Chop Shop, Man Push Cart, and the wonderful 99 Homes. He's very talented, you know, American-born son of Iranian immigrants. So he has a deep cultural connection to a wide perspective on the world. And so he's coming to India with an outsider's perspective in many respects, but adapting an Indian novel. And it's effectively about a guy who is a very low-caste peasant who kind of works his way Scarface style to become the driver of a very, very rich family and their son. And where that goes, the incredibly dark edges that goes in navigating the politics and the business landscape of modern India and all of its horrible, horrible contradictions. It's a really rough film. It's very provocative, but it'll be interesting to see if people stick around for it.
The White Tiger, set in India. Lael?
Yes, agree with Wade. It is a dark film, and it's an interesting sort of counterpoint to Slumdog Millionaire, and that, you know, that came out, gosh, by more than 10 years ago, and was, you know, Danny Boyle directed and heavily, you know, favored by its, you know, through its soundtrack and the great performances and the visuals and much, much praise due to that film for that. But also, it's, even though there was darkness to the edges of the story of that guy's rise to success, it's nothing compared to what you see in The White Tiger, which is incredibly dark, and it makes you sort of wonder if the caste situation in India has worsened since then, where, you know, I think he talks about our lead character who is trying to kind of make his way up this ladder, but keeps getting knocked down like four rungs at a time. You know, he believes that service, that being a servant, that being a driver is the way to get a foothold in the society. But the treatment that he receives at the hands of these sort of evil kind of mob like, you know, millionaires is just really uncalled for and difficult to watch. Because of the propulsive visuals and the kind of kinetic movement, this is a film that, even though you don't always know what time frame you're in, it sort of, in fact, kind of begins in the middle of it, you don't mind, because there's a terrific voiceover narration by Adarsh Gurav, who's the lead character, Bahram, and there's some nice supporting performances, Priyanka Chopra, and it kind of pulls you along and keeps you there for the ride. You don't really know which way you're going to go. You know that it's going to be dark. And it's not, I can't call it fun, but it's certainly engaging.
We're talking about The White Tiger, film set in India, written and directed by Ramin Bahrani. The film's rated R, and it's streaming on Netflix. Coming up, we'll hear what our critics have to say about the drama Cowboys, which is set in Montana. Also, the film Spoor from acclaimed director Agnieszka Holland, who also wrote the screenplay adapting it from the book Drive Your Plow Over the Bones of the Dead. And we'll hear about a number of other films, including Italy's official submission for Oscar consideration. You're listening to Film Week on the podcast you can find everywhere, as well as on 89.3 KPCC and streaming at kpcc.org. You're listening to Film Week. I'm Larry Mantle. Wonderful to have you with us, with critics Wade Major and Lael Lowenstein. Wade's going to tell us about the drama Cowboys, starring Steve Zahn, Gillian Bell, Sasha Knight, and Ann Dowd. Anna Carrigan is the writer-director of the Montana set film. Wade, please tell us about Cowboys.
Well, I will say this. I am a big fan of Steve Zahn normally, and I do respect that they pulled this film off for very little money. It has high production value for a low-budget film of its type. Unfortunately, and I hate saying this because I really do encourage filmmakers to be ambitious and to go for it, but I think there's a surplus of ambition here that undermines the film. It basically centers on a story of a family that has a transgender child, and there's a conflict between the father and the mother over that issue, and Steve Zahn plays the father. That would normally be a really compelling story in and of itself, but now we've made Steve Zahn bipolar, and that adds another layer of complexity to the story, and now we're telling it through this rather complicated nonlinear flashback structure where we're bouncing around in time as Steve Zahn has kidnapped their child and gone on the lam in the hills, and it winds up making it, you have to sort of play a Rubik's Cube game in your head to put the story together in linear fashion while you are trying to wrestle with the issue of a family that has a transgender child and the issue of a guy who is so bipolar that he's bouncing off the walls, can't hold down a job, and alienates everyone that he ever comes into contact with. And all of that is really kind of too much to hang on to for a single film. There are too many emotions. There's too much happening at once. There are too many messages crisscrossing. And the actual story, the emotions sort of get lost in all of the ambition. And it's rather unfortunate. There are sort of three movies fighting against each other in this one movie.
Cowboys is the film. It's unrated, and it can be seen on Lemley's Virtual Cinema. The film from Agnieszka Holland, the writer-director Spore, is set in Poland. The film's unrated. Lael, I understand this film was actually made 3 or so years ago, but we're getting a chance to see it here now.
Yes, Larry, I believe it was made a while ago and was sort of fishing around for a distributor for a long time. And it's not really surprising why it had trouble getting distribution, because even though it comes from Agnieszka Holland, the very esteemed director of films like Europa Europa, it's a weird movie. It's incredibly moody. It's sort of all about atmosphere. It's visually very arresting with these sort of long lingering drone shots of the Slavic countryside, and just, you know, really kind of beautiful score that's very sort of cold at the same time. What it is about is sort of even harder to explain. It's about a loner of a woman, a former engineer who loves animals, and one day her two dogs go missing, and she believes that something mysterious is up because she starts trying to track the missing dogs and realizes that it's a much more sort of complicated story than she anticipates, that perhaps the hunters themselves are involved in this. And in fact, one by one, the hunters themselves start to go missing. There's bits of humor and sort of surprising moments of kind of wry cunning that you don't necessarily expect to come through a film like this. But it's really all about atmosphere and kind of, it's almost like an eco thriller in a way, because she's sort of a social activist, this woman. She's quite a quirky character, but you do get the feeling that she's sort of fighting against the oppression and suppressiveness of the patriarchy. It's really sort of a mix of, I thought, style over content more, but it is a really interesting film and deserves some acknowledgement.
We're talking about Agnieszka's Holland's film Spore. Wade, what do you think?
I was going to call this a rural Euro noir, but Lael called it weird, and I'm going to go with Lael. It is kind of weird. That's a much clearer way of doing it and less pretentious. I enjoyed the film. Until the end, where I think it takes some really unfortunate cop-outs. Now, I can't really blame Agnieszka Holland or anybody else for that, because that's part of the novel. I looked into it, and that is, in fact, how the novel ends. So I'm going to blame the novelist for not having the courage to actually end this story the way that it needed to be ended. But Agnieszka Holland, for the most part, really directs the daylights out of this. It is beautifully made. It is very tense. It has all these wonderful, quirky, weird, noir-y rural edges. It takes place in a mountainous region of Poland that is right on the border of Czechoslovakia or the Czech Republic, and so you get what you usually get in kind of these Appalachian thrillers in the U.S. as well, which is a very, very fringe collection of characters, and it's hard to sort of know who's good and who isn't, and who has secrets and who doesn't, and that keeps you on your toes, and that's fun to watch. But everything Lael said is spot on. It really is quite peculiar, and the lead character is very, very hard to like.
Spore is the film. It's unrated, from writer-director Agnieszka Holland. The film is available on multiple on-demand platforms, including Apple TV and Google Play. Italy's official submission for Oscar consideration for the documentary Notturno, which is directed by Gianfranco Rossi. Wade, what'd you think of Notturno?
This is a haunting, compelling film. Rossi was nominated for an Academy Award a few years ago for Fire at Sea, which was his documentary about the migrant crisis. And his documentaries are very hands-off. They're very meditative. He steps back and he sort of shoots over a period of years and time and captures the poetry of tragic situations. That is his MO. He spent 3 years making this, primarily in Kurdistan, Syria, and Iraq, capturing the effectively the fallout of the wars there that have impacted so many innocent people. And there are moments here where you feel almost guilty that you're watching what you're watching. You're a fly on the wall to people whose lives have been shattered, who are trying to rebuild them, and it almost feels wrong that you're in the presence of something so private and so personal. There are other scenes which, if you're a parent, they will absolutely tear your heart out. You know, Lael and I are both parents. When you have children, they draw pictures. You expect those pictures to be of fun things in their imagination, their friends, school, the tree outside. They have children here who were Yazidi children who suffered under the torment and persecution of ISIS. And what do they draw pictures of? They draw pictures of torture, of murder, of the people who were drawn away, of unspeakable things that, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old children should never have in their minds. And this is what they share when they draw their pictures. And you see a wall of it. And it's almost unbearable. And I think Rossi stands a very good chance of getting another Oscar nomination with this film.
Notturno, the film from Gianfranco Rossi. The film is unrated. Lemley's Virtual Cinema, the place you can see it. Sudan's official submission for Oscar consideration is the drama You Will Die at 20. Wade?
Yeah, not a bad film. Not as good as it probably could be or should be, but this is Sudan's first ever submission to the Oscars, and you have to really kind of applaud them. The director is Amjad Abu Alala. This is his directorial debut. He is educated in the United Arab Emirates. He went to film school there, and he's primarily a documentary filmmaker for news organizations in the Emirates. But he is Sudanese, and he wanted to tell a story that was very, very close to his culture. And it is a story of a young man who, an Islamic prophet slash shaman figure, a sheikh, something very specific to Sudanese culture, prophecies upon his birth that he will die at the age of 20. And this is kind of a curse that haunts him through his life, and you see his life sort of evolve in somewhat Moonlight style, sort of in stages, you know, as a young boy and then as a young man, and how this impacts his relationships, his relationship with his mother, his father who abandons the family because of this curse on the day of his birth, later comes back. It's in many respects, it's an allegory. An allegory for everything that, you know, makes Sudanese culture so cohesive, but also prevents them from being able to emerge from the many horrors that have plagued them over the decades. It's provocative. I wish it were a little bit more polished and perhaps a little bit tighter dramatically, but it has some incredibly powerful scenes in it, and I do applaud it.
You Will Die at 20, again, is directed and co-written by Amjad Abu Alala, co-written with Youssef Ibrahim. The film stars Mustafa Shehata and Moatassem Rashid. The film's unrated. You can see You Will Die at 20 via Lemley's Virtual Cinema, which should get a lot of traffic with all these films that are available there this week. The documentary, A Woman's Work, The NFL's Cheerleader Problem, is directed by Yu Gu. Lael?
This is an interesting film, and I reviewed another one a year or so ago about the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders that sort of explained how that particular group came to be, you know, so nationally kind of iconic, and how important they were to the rise of the Cowboys and sort of in our collective imaginations and so forth. This is a different look at the cheerleader issue. This is about, this doc as it follows a couple of women who were former cheerleaders who, after working, you know, for 9 months where they don't get paid and only really getting paid for the games that they perform at, they, you know, worked to the bone, you know, after a certain period of time, they said, wait a minute, this is not right. I'm being exploited here. The question then arises naturally, well, didn't you sign up for this? It's a great privilege to be a cheerleader. You know, you should be glad to be that. And we see this particular opinion espoused by certain fans of the game and so forth, which is a really, it kind of gets ugly in the discussion about whether it's possible to be a cheerleader and a feminist. I was persuaded that in fact you can, and there's in fact a class action lawsuit that's brought by a bunch of these cheerleaders, and it's still pending. It's not clear which way it's going to go. I did feel also that to some extent the movie got a little bit trapped in the not mired in the Me Too and Time's Up movement, but I felt the timing of the two movements sort of got a little bit confusing with the timeline of the film. And there was a lot of B-roll and sort of they didn't know where to go in terms of how much of what was happening socially to sort of bring in to the context of the story. And I sort of wish that they had brought a little bit more of it in and sort of taken a little more time with that. But the women's stories, their own testimonials is very interesting. And it sort of opened my eyes to what it was to be a cheerleader and just how much exploitation there really was. It's attractively shot, briskly edited, really kind of overall pretty much recommend.
It's funny, Lael, because this sounds like in many ways the counterpoint to all these TV shows that show the making of a Dallas Cowboy cheerleader and things. You know, there's a lot of those shows that are on for entertainment that shows the whole auditioning process and what they go through to be a part of the troupe, the choreography and the public appearances and everything. And this sounds like it's a good counterpoint to that. Does the film say that any of this is changing, that there are greater employment protections or pay increases that are coming to the women?
That's a good point. I think that, you know, just by sort of bringing this into the public conversation about how the cheerleaders have been treated and mistreated and, you know, the fact that these class action lawsuits have been covered in the media, it sort of changed the public perception a little bit of what a cheerleader is. And it's also changed, you know, sort of the NFL's willingness to take responsibility for it. There's a point in the film where the NFL says, this isn't up to us. This is up to the individual teams, you know, trying to sidestep any responsibility for it. And then one of the attorneys pulls out a document that the NFL commissioner had signed about the cheerleaders and, you know, sort of mandating everything about how they're employed and so forth. So that was really fascinating. And I do think it's changing. Of course, football is still a very, very male dominated world, as is professional sports in general. But we're seeing that change bit by bit with more women owners and more, you know, people stepping into positions of power. So, yes, yeah. I do think it's starting to change.
And the Rams, I think, have a couple of men who are part of their cheerleading corps, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, that would be kind of interesting.
Yeah.
Isn't it? Yes, I was wondering that myself.
Yeah, they're very good. The games I've been at, they're excellent. A Woman's Work, The NFL's Cheerleader Problem, is unrated, and you can see it starting next Tuesday on iTunes and Fandango Now on their on-demand platforms. Yu Gu, the director of the documentary. The romantic film Preparation to be together for an unknown period of time is set in Budapest. The film, written and directed by Lily Horvat. Wade?
Yeah, this is our third Academy Award submission from for foreign language. This is the Hungarian submission this year. A very interesting film. Again, not entirely successful, but I call it it's a brand of European film that I call an interior thriller. They usually come from France, and they are thrillers in the sense that we are not looking for to resolve a crime. There's no sort of great geopolitical issue at stake. It's someone's emotions. It's their the instability. The thriller revolves around is someone's emotional state, usually a relationship, usually a family thing. In this case, it's about a woman who's a neurosurgeon working very successfully in the United States, meets a Hungarian man, and believes that basically they have a future together. So she relocates to Hungary kind of to chase him. And when she encounters him, he says, "I don't know who you are, and we've never met." And then the question that the film sort of proceeds to dangle in front of you is she crazy? Is he even real? Are these moments that she's experiencing imagined? Are they embellished? You're never quite sure. It does keep you on edge as to what's real and what isn't real and what may or may not be imagined, and is she stable or unstable? And she's seeing a therapist through all of this as well. It's a little bit of a flashback structure from her therapy sessions. But ultimately, it revolves in a very satisfying way. So even if it kind of plays some cloying tricks with you here and there that feel a little manipulative and a little fraudulent, it winds up going to an emotional place that I think is very, very authentic and rewarding. So I can forgive some of the clumsy missteps that it takes on its way there, because it does get you across the finish line in a satisfying way.
Well, to know what I think of Budapest, it's the wallpaper on my phone, a shot that I took over the Danube. It's just spectacularly beautiful. And do you really get a sense of the city in this, Wade?
You do. You know, my wife took me to Budapest for my birthday some years ago, and I fell in love with it. Next to Paris, I think it's the most beautiful city I've ever been in the world. And you really do. It captures Budapest in a wonderful way, but not in an ostentatious way where the city overwhelms the characters. It really is very much kind of a backdrop to the emotions, and it's used very effectively.
Preparations to be together for an unknown period of time is Hungary's official Oscar submission. The film, written and directed by Lily Horvat, and is unrated. The documentary Ninth Circuit Cowboy, about former LA-based Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals Judge Harry Pragerson. Wade.
So, Ninth Circuit Cowboy, it's about an hour long. It's a short documentary. Full disclosure, the director is Terry Sanders, Oscar-winning filmmaker who was my first teacher at UCLA Film School. So I am conflicted here, but it's really a fascinating look at the very, very controversial former Ninth Circuit Court Justice Pregerson, who, of course, very divisive, very, very progressive, beloved by people on the left and despised by people on the right. But all of those emotions notwithstanding, I do think it gives you a wonderful profile of the man. I think it's worth seeing no matter what your persuasion is.
Ninth Circuit Cowboy, one of the most divisive judicial figures, certainly here in Los Angeles. Harry Pragerson, the late judge, profiled in Terry Sanders' documentary. It's unrated, and it starts streaming on Vimeo On Demand and Amazon Prime Video next Tuesday. For our Film Week critics, I'm Larry Mantle. Stay tuned. Coming right up, I'll be back to tell you about John Horne, a special interview that he's got with us on Film Week.